This has been Stage Diving, your weekly concert update on CJAM 99.1 FM.
It's time for You Talking to Me with your host, Big JD.
That's right. You're listening to You Talking to Me. I'm your host, Big JD. Today's guest is Chris Soda. He's here to discuss some very interesting facts about our existence. And he's a researcher and international educator. He's the author of Hollow Be the Name. And here he is on You Talking to Me. Hi, Chris.
Good afternoon, Jeff. Thanks for having me here.
We got some incredible things to talk about today. So let's start off with a little bit about your background as an educator.
Okay, well, born and raised in Windsor, educated right here at the University of Windsor, traveled overseas, taught in Vietnam, Japan, South Korea,
wow,
and in Europe. Yeah.
Great. And ties here at the university, you...
Teach students here, yeah. I tutor mm-hmm. students here, alumni member, of course, and I enjoy coming back to University of Windsor all the time. Yeah, a lot of memories here, good memories.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
So your research is rather in-depth, and of course we'll get into the whole release of your book, Hollow Be the Name. Where does your fascination lie within the content? Is it with the research on who we are, where we come from, the grand design, or is it numbers and mathematics?
Well, the book's a little bit of both, as you know. The basic idea, as you said, where is the fascination, comes from trying to understand things around us in a simple manner, not to complicate the obvious. I know there's a lot that I don't know. However, there's a lot that I think we can all find out about just by keeping it simple, going step by step, and using the tools that we have before us now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically our minds, our imagination, and our ability to think clearly. So, yeah.
Great. And let's talk a little bit about numbers. I know some of this information is available on the internet, some common or maybe not so common knowledge, but taught in schools, and there's a lot more to this as you've uncovered. And start with an explanation maybe of the actual the Fibonacci sequence.
Yeah, okay.
What is that exactly?
Okay, well, Fibonacci's
not so much as you've discovered, but what is the Fibonacci?
Okay, Fibonacci's a nickname for a guy, a mathematician, mm-hmm. Italian mathematician. His actual name is Pisano, and he devised a method using numbers.
Isn't that friend in Italian? Pisano?
Pisano, I hope so.
Okay.
he designed a method. A mathematical method using simple numbers to predict how many rabbits would be born in populations. So he started with 0 and 1 and then worked his way up from there and created a formula to discover mating patterns in rabbits. But from that formula, we found a constant, or actually Pisano found a constant. That constant is, if you string two numbers, any two numbers together, except for 0, 0, you string them together, you'll eventually end up with a universal pattern.
Right.
Fibonacci found just the one pattern using one set of numbers. Those numbers were 0, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, and so on. But in fact, this pattern is everywhere with all numbers.
Right, and we're going to talk more about that as well. But tell us a little bit how biology fits into this, as well, the as far as attraction and things like that.
Well, the basic, what I found is that the human DNA chromosome has a specific length and width, and that length and width corresponds to, believe it or not, the same pattern that Fibonacci found in his prediction of rabbit population. So basic idea is human DNA, the length and its width matches the symbolic pattern that we have in numbers. Of course, some people think that's chance. Some people think it's a little more than chance.
Mm-hmm. And as well, in physical attraction with you know, the look of somebody's face or the attractiveness of a building.
That's you're referring to something called the golden mean.
Okay.
The golden mean is the basic number is 1.618, mm-hmm. and the other number for that is 0.618. And there's a lot of evidence to support the fact that the human eye finds proportions of 1.618 and 0.618 to be the most appealing. So, for example, your nose, your eyes, your lips, your cheeks, and so on, if those are patterned on the human face in a proportion to 1.618, scientists tell us that that is the most appealing to the human eye. Same thing with the building. Mm-hmm. If you have a building and its proportion in a 1.618 pattern, that building is aesthetically pleasing to the human eye. But of course, that number goes much further than just aesthetic pleasure. So.
Right. And now I want you to talk a little bit about your research and what you've discovered, because the way, and is it pronounced Fibonacci?
Yes, Fibonacci.
Okay, Fibonacci. this works with any numbers.
Right. That's the amazing part, Jeff. We're all taught, well, a lot of us that took mathematics in school were taught that Fibonacci was a mathematician who found a specific sequence using a specific series of numbers, and that these numbers are so-called special numbers. Mm-hmm. In fact, the Fibonacci sequence is a universal sequence using any two numbers to begin except 400. And this pattern follows all physical reality from the largest physical reality that we know of, which is the shape of the universe, right down to one of the smallest physical realities that we know of, which is human DNA. It's the same pattern, and it's with any two numbers, not just so-called Fibonacci numbers.
Right, and we're definitely going to get into talking a little bit about that, the universe, the planets as well, and the relationship there. And I want to ask you a little bit again about the rabbits.
Okay, JD. Well, the basic idea, Mr. Pisano, a.k.a. Fibonacci, he was trying to predict how many rabbits could be produced from a population of two, one male and one female.
Mm-hmm.
That's the basic idea.
Did that grow into the 0.618 or 1.618?
Okay.
And then be attributed to so many other things?
The basic idea, he started with 0.1.
Yeah.
No rabbits, then one rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
And what he did was he made a number line. So he started with the number 0 and the number 1, added them, the last two numbers together, he added them, and he got 1 again. So now he has a number line that goes 0, 1, 1. Then he added the last two numbers together again, and he got 2. So now he adds that 2 to his number line, and now he gets a number line that begins 0, 1, 1, 2.
Mm-hmm.
Add the last two numbers together, and you get 3. Add the last two numbers together, and you get 5. And you string this line out, and that was his mathematical way of predicting rabbit population. So the basic line, again, is 0 for Fibonacci, mm-hmm. is 0, 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21, and so on. But what happens, JD, is that when you start at the beginning point of that number line and you divide the lower number into the higher number, you'll eventually end up with a constant sequence. And that constant sequence in the Fibonacci sequence is 0.618. So starting with 0 and 1 and working your way out 10, 15 numbers on this number line, you'll eventually divide from the lowest to the highest and get a constant. That constant is, again, 0.618. And if you start at the end of the number line, mm-hmm. and you work your way back towards the start, you'll end up with a second constant. That second constant is 1.618. So from the beginning, dividing upwards towards the end of your number line, you'll get a constant, number 1, 0.618. Dividing from the end of your number line, working back towards the beginning, you'll end up with a second constant, 1.618. And this is the basic premise of what's called the Fibonacci sequence. But the fact of the matter is, you can take any two numbers, negative numbers, positive numbers, decimals, fractions, whatever you want, any two numbers except 400.
Is there a reason why this didn't come out with Fibonacci or taught later?
I've
somebody
never seen
want us to know this?
I've never seen it taught before. I don't know if it is taught.
Okay.
Which is why it's in my book. I found this, you know, I found this Fibonacci thing to be interesting, but I started to use other numbers, mm-hmm. not only 0-1, but I used 2, 3, 5, 8. I started to use my birth dates, you know, my and different things. And I found, in fact, in the book, you'll see I used the number of letters in my favorite hockey team.
So it doesn't matter what it is.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And adding numbers this way, could it not be said that if you do something similar, you would find repetition and a similar outcome with other numbers? I mean, if you did numbers, skip, you know, something in between, or did something, does it work like that?
So if you add the last two numbers together in your number line, you'll always get this constant. It doesn't matter which two numbers you have.
Okay.
Doesn't matter, which is an amazing sort of thing. So again, you start with any two numbers on your number line. Let's pick, 5 and 10, 3 and 11, 1/8 and 2/3, whatever you want. Mm-hmm. You start with those two numbers, add them together, string out your line 15 or 20 numbers, go back to the beginning, divide upwards. You'll end up with that constant that Fibonacci said only fit his numbers. In fact, it's universal. It's 0.618 going outwards, 1.618 coming back to
the
source.
What about the chaos?
Okay.
Talk a little bit about the chaos.
All right.
Why does that exist? And I'm sort of even surprised. I mean, it doesn't go on for that long, I guess, but you would think somebody might get discouraged at the beginning and not even have found out that, you know.
This could have been what happened, right, J.D. You know, the basic idea, when you do this, when you take these numbers and form your number line, the first 5 or 8 or 10 numbers, you're going to have, as you call it, chaos, mm-hmm. which means you're not going to have a constant produced when you divide up the line. But after that chaos point, you get a constant. So it's maybe 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 numbers, and suddenly, like a snap of your fingers, when you start dividing up, you're going to get a constant. So in other words, if we took Fibonacci's original numbers, 0, 1, add them together to get 1, and then 2, 3, 5, 8, etc., when you divide upwards, 0 divided by 1, 1 divided by 1, 1 divided by 2, and so on, you're going to get random answers, and that's called the chaos. But after 10 or 15 numbers, you're not going to get random numbers anymore. You're going to get one number, and that one number is, going outwards, 0.618.
Coming back, 1.618.
Okay, thanks.
Is that right? Yeah. Then the chaos, have you done any research into the chaos, or why is there chaos, or is it just
part of the
equation?
Yeah, the basic pattern is this. You start with any two numbers, and then you string out your number line, and you start dividing. You have your chaos followed by your constant.
Mm-hmm.
This fits with human records of how the reality that we have around us was formed. Lots of religions, lots of scientists talk about a chaos in the beginning of creation followed by some kind of order. This is matching in the physical world. In other words, the universe was created with some, there was some sort of unpredictable material and unpredictable patterns at the beginning, and then someone or something took that material and put it into a pattern. That matches the symbolic pattern that we find in numbers. It's the same sort of thing. Chaos followed by order. When you have your symbolic numbers, you have chaos followed by order. When you have physical reality, you've got your original chaos followed by some kind of order.
Mm-hmm.
So they match.
And I want to ask you a little bit about its relation to the Pentagon.
Okay, the Pentagon shape.
The shape, sure.
Okay,
because that has a relationship with the... Right,
yeah,
not the Pentagon.
We don't want that, yeah, yeah,
sure,
yeah.
Sure, we'll have the Secret Service here
if you're listening, yeah. Okay, basic idea, the Pentagon shape refers... Pentagon shape is a five-sided figure. So basically, anybody who's a baseball fan and knows what home plate looks like would be able to figure out what a Pentagon is. It's any five-sided figure. The basic idea... you're referring to is the Pentagon shape of the universe. And what NASA has found with their lasers and their telescopes and their satellites, when they've tried to map the outer limits of the universe as we know it, they come up with, believe it or not, a Pentagon shape design to the physical universe as we know it. Now, the catch tonight is there is a mathematical property that applies to any Pentagon shape, and that mathematical property is, believe it or not, related to none other than 1.618.
Wow. It's
amazing. So the numbers match, and all the physical reality matches, and also the shape of the universe. It's the same constant.
It's pretty incredible stuff. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little more about the Pentagon, the universe, and we'll talk about the book, Hollow Be the Name, with Chris Soda. I'm Big JD. This is You Talking to Me on CJAM.
You're listening to You Talking to Me with Big JD on CJAM 99.1 FM, redefining radio in Windsor and Detroit.
Do you have an interesting career? You have an interesting life experience to share with others. If you'd like to be a guest on You Talking to Me, contact me, Big JD, at the You Talking to Me website. That's youtalkingtome.ca. The letter U, talking, the number two, me, youtalkingtome.ca.
All right, we're back, and I'm talking to author Chris Soda. He's with us, and we've been talking about numbers and their relationship and why that relationship may exist, and how does this work in relation to our planetary system? And I want to talk about the planets a little bit, and also back to that Pentagon again, because the universe is apparently shaped out of a bunch of pentagons.
Yeah, I believe, I just off the top of my head here, I believe the correct mathematical term for that series of pentagons is something like a dodecahedron. That's too complicated.
I remember seeing the name. Yeah. I should have wrote it down. Yeah. Yes.
It's soccer ball. I say soccer ball. It's much easier to understand. So,
sure.
Yeah, basically the physical universe.
Isn't that a football, actually?
I
if
guess
you really want to get
Europe,
technical.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a series of pentagon shapes strung together. This is what NASA tells us is what they have found to be the shape of the physical universe that as we know it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and that pentagon shape matches the numerical constant in all numbers of 1.618. Referring to the planets are over our heads. It's the same deal. It's the same thing. All the motions of the planets, how long they take to go around the sun, how long they take to turn around and rotate, and how big they are all related to, believe it or not, the same two constants, 1.618 and 0.618. It's right across the board, including the moon.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess it's believed. And maybe you'll talk a little bit about your theories on this. Is this something that's believed by others as well, that it's a part of a creator?
Okay, yeah, that's one of the age-old arguments.
Sure.
Was there a creator, or was there a so-called natural explanation for the physical reality that we have around us?
What's the most is the most popular belief that this is this is by chance, this number thing?
Okay, well, the Fibonacci sequence itself, no one's ever discussed that in terms of, is this an example of a design? But
and is that was it at that time related to everything else, like the planets and this and that? And
it was, but they weren't aware. You know, I think Pisano, yeah, there, the Fibonacci guy, I think he was in the 1500s.
Okay.
So at that time, you know, the knowledge of our solar system wasn't as prevalent as it is now.
Sure.
Yeah, but yeah, no one's ever gone back to actually figure out how all these things have tied in together.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I went to NASA's website.
We'll have to wait for Chris's second book for that, I think.
We'll see. Yeah, it's time-consuming and fun, but we'll see. Anyway, I went to NASA's website, European Space. You know, common information that's available to the public. I didn't have any special. But when I took all the information and put it together, I didn't use computers. I just used, you know, pen and paper and one of those little Texas calculators. And I figured it all out. And I said, how come nobody else knows this? And I thought, you know, so I started to check, and I said, maybe I missed something. Haven't found it.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, well, how could I be the first one to find it? Yet the information that I'm using is coming from these public websites, from NASA and other places. So, yeah, to get to your question, is this maybe, has this been found by somebody else and not talked about? I as conjecture, I'd like to think no. I like to think that they're all honest people and they tell us everything that they know. But then the realistic part of me kicks in and I say, well, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, in with all this and included in your book, Hollow Be the Name, you talk about some other things as far as a creator, what could be related to a creator, extraterrestrial. And you bring up some interesting points about ancient art and some of the things that, you know, writing on the walls, so to speak, records and writing that implies that there's intelligence outside the Earth. So when we talk about recording events, recording of extraterrestrials, there's history that implies that they exist. So tell us a little bit about some of the things that you have in the book, like the paintings that you have some graphics of.
Well, yeah, basically I went through...
The crucifixion is one that comes to mind.
Yeah, the famous, in the book there, it's one of those oil and paint frescoes, mm-hmm. and it's called, it's called the Crucifixion. Anyway, it's in Serbia. It's about 700 years old, and it depicts the most important act in Christianity, which is, the death of Christ on the cross. And I found this particular fresco fascinating because in that fresco, you see in the sky two men. One man in what appears to be a vehicle, and another man who also appears to be in a vehicle. One following the other, or looks to me like maybe chasing the other. Mm-hmm. But that, to me, is very confusing, because the people who made this fresco were hardcore Christians. They believed in the works of the Bible, the words of the Bible, and so on. Yet, when they depicted that act of Christianity, the crucifixion of Christ, they bothered to put in the sky two other men flying in objects which would, you know, take away from the message and the main central figure of this fresco, which is supposed to be Christ himself. So I thought that was rather odd that they would, why would they bother to put that in a fresco? And I checked and I asked different people. I asked some archaeologists. I asked some historians.
What are they saying?
Well,
no idea.
I have an idea, but I'm laughing because they told me it was, they all said that, that those two objects in the sky are the sun and the moon.
Right.
Which I thought was laughable. If you look at that fresco, number one...
They do tend to have some kind of a design on part of them that's
correct.
Depicted of the sun and one of the moon, but you bring up some interesting points that they're the tail ends of these things as if they were moving in a direction.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. Well, the normal way to depict the sun in an ancient painting would be to show a ball in the sky with lines around it to indicate brightness.
Raise all the way around.
All the way around, sure. At 360, right. But what you find in this fresco is that the lines that are around the object that's containing the person are only emanating from the rear, the back end of this this vehicle in the sky, to indicate motion, not mm-hmm. brightness. The sun doesn't shine only three rays. It shines right around. So obviously that's not the sun. And the moon would be the same way. You know, the moon also, if it's glowing at night, it would have a glow. They would show them with a glow around it. They wouldn't show it with a cutaway feature to show lines. So that's the other interesting thing about this fresco. If it's the sun and moon, why did the artists bother to show a cutaway version of these two craft in the sky, with each one with a man inside? And if you look at it, you'll see they're operating some sort of gear mm-hmm. with their hands, like what we would call a gear shift on a automatic or on a car. So I thought that was rather odd to show.
Obviously, they're spaceships. We'll just come out right out and say
well,
it.
Well, you know, I tend to think they are, but in any case, whatever they are, they don't belong in that picture. In terms of depicting the act of Christ,
not the way that we believe.
Okay, the way the Bible says that the sky became dark at the time of the crucifixion. So, if the sky became dark, how could the moon be glowing in the sky, and how could the sun be there?
Sure,
it wouldn't happen. Yeah. So I thought those explanations that I received that were not consistent with what I knew to be the case with that particular fresco. Yeah.
And I want to talk about your book now. Hollow Be the Name. And first, let's talk a little bit about, and so many of these things tie in together, Hollow Be the Name, the title that you chose, the information about the moon, the information about the moon being hollow, the languages, and
correct.
How they relate to, you know, things that about the moon that most people don't really realize. So let's start with the title, why you chose it, and then get into the moon a little bit.
Okay, well, Hollow Be the Name is a play on the words, Hallowed Be Thy Name. For all of us who were raised in a Christian or Catholic atmosphere, we all know the Lord's Prayer, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, etc., etc. I put this in the book, Hallowed Be the Name, because one of the central features of my research was that, by all indications, the moon has a hollow core, or some great hollowness within it. And that hollowness is depicted in the sounds that human languages have used to describe moon and hollow over the centuries. The amazing part, JD, is that throughout, I studied about 3,000 languages, maybe a little more, and in each of them, I found a relationship with each other. That relationship is, in, for example, language A, the sound that was used to depict the idea of moon is the same sound in language B or C or D for the sound to depict the idea of hollow. So we have the idea of moon and the idea of hollow being matched in human languages going back thousands of years. Normally, if someone were to name a physical object, they would name the physical object based on some outstanding physical characteristic of it. For example, if you had a blue mohawk, I might say, you know,
blue mohawk.
Oh, did you really? Okay. Or red hair or something like this.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you know, if you're an ancient person, you would, you know, somebody tall, you would, or short, or whatever, strong, you would use some sort of physical characteristic to design a name for that.
Sure.
But the last thing that I could imagine an ancient person doing would be to use the idea of hollow to name the moon. The moon does not look like a hollow object. I mean, it was worshipped. It was considered, you know, they were people were fearful of it. It had strength, and yet they often used the idea of hollow in their sound to depict it and its name. So I thought that was a bit interesting when you consider the geological information NASA provided from the moon landings, which indicates that there is a hollow moon over our heads in the sky, or some great hollowness within the moon that could not have happened naturally. All of science agrees the moon could not be formed naturally based on the laws of science that we know. Yet, when we study the moon, when NASA went there and they studied the moon, the moon's characteristics, to this day, they find that there is information consistent with the moon being hollow or great parts of it being hollow. Fascinating stuff.
Definitely.
People on the Earth 2,000 years ago would have had no idea this, yet they followed with their naming of the moon the same solution that NASA found with their spaceships going to the moon. So pretty fascinating stuff.
Definitely fascinating, and all this and more, obviously, in Hollow Be the Name by Chris Soda. And you wrote this book in a way that everybody could understand it.
Correct.
And there's a reason for that. You want everybody to understand this.
Yeah, I think, you know, the basic idea, JD, is that I was trying to get across the point that this information that I found should be available to everyone, and not just the information I found, but information in general that the taxpayer is paying for should be available to the taxpayer. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, it's very difficult for the average person to understand mathematics, science, and things like that. You can understand these ideas. You don't have to have big big names, PhDs, whatever. You can understand this simply.
So, and what's the best way for somebody to get in touch with you to get a copy of this book?
Best way would be soda.chris@gmail.com.
All right, soda.chris@gmail.com, and we'll have a link to that on the You Talking to Me website as well, so that you know, you just check out youtalkingtome.ca and send an email off to Chris Soda to get your copy of Hollow Be the Name. Chris, I really appreciate you being on the show.
Nice.
Thanks for being
here, JD. Thank you very much.
Well, is the moon hollow? Is there a creator, or did we evolve? For more on the formula of creation, check out Chris Soda's book, Hollow Be the Name. His emails, we'll have that linked up to the You Talking to Me website, youtalkingtome.ca, and you can contact him directly to order. And next week, Success Against the Odds with Vonda White. We'll see you then. Thanks for listening.